From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, where 21 tons of sand are being loaded into a theater. It may have been a strange sight to people passing by. 840 50-pound bags of sand being wheeled on pushcart dollies. The sand will help set the stage for an opera. It's called Sun and Sea. It won the top prize at the Venice Biennale in 2019. And as reported by the New York Times, it has emerged as a masterpiece in the era of climate change. The performance touches on the themes of consumption, globalization, and ecological crisis. It opened on Wednesday, and it runs through September 26th. Why an opera about climate change? Well, David Binder, the artistic director of the Brooklyn Academy of Music, told the Times, quote, "It disarms you and it lures you in. That's not the way we're used to receiving work about the issues of our day, what we are all facing in this summer of fires and floods and what we've done to the planet," end quote. It's one example of how art can help people be introduced to, understand, and engage with climate action. Youth climate leaders in our area hope to use an art challenge to do the same. Their challenge is part of the upcoming Green Games organized by the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders. During Climate Week, September 26th through October 2nd, they will be challenging their peers across the Finger Lakes region to take action on climate issues in different ways. In addition to the art challenge, they'll introduce ideas like Meatless Mondays, efforts to divest from fossil fuels. The goal is to help move schools toward carbon reduction and increase awareness and activism at different levels, individually, yes, but also structurally. This hour, we're previewing the Green Games with our guests who also discuss the youth climate movement. And I'd like to welcome them now. In studio with us, Lola DeAscentis is a senior at Mercy High School, a member of the New York Youth Climate Leaders, and a participant in the Rock City Compost Pilot Program. Lola, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Harrison Jurenko is here. Harrison's a senior at School of the Arts and a member of the Seneca Park Zoo Urban Ecologist Program. Harrison, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me as well.
Bridget Musaw is a junior at Brighton High School, leader of the Brighton High School Climate Club, and a Rochester field organizer for the New York Youth Climate Leaders. Bridget, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks so much.
And Poppy Burak is an eighth grader at School of the Arts who's trying to bring back SOTA's Climate Club. Poppy, welcome. Thanks for being on with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So there's a ton to talk about this hour, starting with something going on today. Lola, can I ask you to kind of set the scene? What's happening now and what do you want people to know about that's coming up here?
Yes. So we are from the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, and we're a local organization that really wants to get other young people just like us involved in the climate movement, both by making changes in their own lives and for fighting for legislative changes on local and state levels. So the week of the 26th, September 26th through October 2nd, we're going to be hosting the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders Climate League 2021, and which we've affectionately named the Green Games. I don't know if anyone's seen our logo, but it's structurally kind of looks like the five Olympic rings. So it's very loosely based on the Olympics, with the idea of friendly competition, competing with your school, building unity with your school, with friendly competition with other schools in the Rochester area, but also just really coming together for a good cause.
I love the fact that you've got different themes on different days, and that's going to give us a chance to talk about not only what's coming up that week, but also how our guests on the show today see these issues and how they're sort of engaging with climate and their own climate future. I mean, they are a different generation than I am. They've got more time in front of them to sort of get their heads around what's actually happening. And it's really interesting to see how they're growing into this role in activism. So we'll talk about the themes coming up there, from Meatless Monday to the art challenge to environmental justice. We'll do all that coming up here. Let me also ask our guests to tell you a little bit about who they are and why they're involved with this. So Lola, I started with you. Tell me a little bit more about some of the things you're involved with and why you've decided at this age to get involved.
Yeah, so I'm, of course, involved with RYCL. I'm involved with the New York Youth Climate Leaders, which is a much larger organization than RYCL, and it works with youth from all over the state of New York to fight for legislative change. And I've also been doing the Rochester City Pilot Program for composting. Now, what I find really interesting about what I do is that I find that in my own personal life, I try to make decisions such as participating in the Rochester City compost program that will really make individual difference. So if I can compost, then it's reducing the amount of trash my family is putting out on the curb every week. Say I have my reusable water bottle here. I try not to use any disposable plastics. And that's just really important to me because I know that my generation is not only going to be the one inheriting this planet, but we are going to be the one dealing with the worst of the effects of climate change. If you look at right now, we have Hurricane Ida, we have tornadoes, we had a snowstorm in Texas, California's on fire. This is all just so scary to see at a young age because we know that when we grow up, it's only going to get worse, and we have to be the ones to make the change. And that's where the legislative action comes in. Because even though we can individually make changes in our own lives, none of that is really going to matter if we don't have legislation that is pushing us even farther forward. Take the fossil fuel industry, for example, which is really killing our planet. Being able to be a young person and speaking out on the fossil fuel industry and the harm that it's causing us currently when it comes to public health and the harm that it can continue to cause us for generations to come is something that I'm just so passionate about.
So let me explore that thing before I turn to your co-panelists a little bit, because you bring up fossil fuels. When I was your age, fossil fuels were, everybody was driving gas cars. There was very little, there was some talk about hybridization, things like that. It was kind of viewed as niche or a little weird. And there were some vehicles that were a little bit more fuel efficient, but not that many. And now it's a very, very different world. And yet we still have gas stations everywhere. You still have fossil. Do you look at this age now, kind of coming into adulthood, do you find it strange that we haven't moved more quickly given what we now know about this?
I do find it strange because there is so much harm caused by just the simple thing like driving a mile in your car. But at the same time, I think to some degree it makes sense because it's just human nature to kind of, this sounds sort of negative, but wait until we finally see those effects to really make a difference. Now, of course, looking back at the 1970s, there were signs of climate change now, but nothing as severe as what we're seeing now. So I would say that I'm hopeful that as awful as all of these extreme weather conditions are, and as awful as the destruction is, that this will be kind of the final push to really move completely towards environmental sustainability in all aspects of our lives.
All right, Harrison Jerenko, you got to follow that. So tell me a little bit. Tell me a little bit about you. Tell me what you're involved with and why you've been involved in various ways here.
Well, starting or very early on in elementary school, I got interested due to some learning experiences at my school about climate change, about plastic pollution, overconsumption, and from that, in the sixth grade, when RYCL was founded, I joined. Partly off my own will and partly because of community service hours. But I really fell in love with the group and all the action that we're doing and taking involving youth.
Wait a second. So you got involved partially because you had to, but it turned out that you actually really dug it.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's very honest. I think that's great.
Yeah. And I think that's the situation a lot of the time where people will, be compelled to do something and realize that they're really passionate about that. And I think that happens a lot with climate action and climate involvement, especially with youth who realize that this is an issue that is really important to them and that they're really concerned about and is one of the issues that they care about and makes them more likely to, fight for legislative change and things we'll talk about later, like divestment.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Okay, so here you are now, and are you as optimistic as your colleague here? She says she's optimistic despite some of these issues because she feels like the evidence is becoming so much more compelling than maybe it was a generation ago, and when you are staring right at the evidence, it's hard not to act. So I think that's what I'm summing up with Lola says. I wonder if you feel the same way.
I definitely lean a little more on the pessimist side. Still seeing people in Congress outright deny the reality of climate change and refuse to act, or kind of even people on both sides aisle kind of just dawdling around and not really getting anything done, committing and not taking action. I think the Biden administration has actually made a lot of commitments, re-entered the Paris Climate Accords, but hasn't done so much in the way of action.
I think that's very honest, and I appreciate that. I think it's important for especially adults of all ages to hear what these students who are coming into their own adulthood feel is being done and not done, and whether they are frankly disappointed with the way adults have handled governance, everything from energy consumption and basic habits to the infrastructure of the world we've set up. So this is the world they're inheriting, and you're hearing it directly on how they feel about what they are inheriting. Let me turn to Bridget, a junior at Brighton High School. Bridget, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you've been involved.
Yeah, so when I was younger, I was always like a pretty outdoorsy kid. I've always really liked being outside, and like I remember I used to like love Jane Goodall so much. Like I read all of her books and watched her movies, and so that kind of just led me to love the earth. But like from another standpoint, there was like this anxiety of like, I've always been really anxious about climate change. And I think that's a pretty common thing for kids in our generation. There's a lot of anxiety and a lot of climate change specific anxiety. And so that was something that was always pretty prominent in my life. And once I got to high school, that was the year of the international climate strikes and like when Greta Thunberg was becoming a really big deal. And my school climate club was getting really involved with the Rochester strike. And so I joined the climate club, and a lot of the older kids kind of like led me and were really big role models for me that year. And they got me introduced to RYCL, and it just kind of escalated. And now I'm also organizing with NYTCL, which is like a statewide organization, which has been an amazing experience. And I feel the same way that it's just, we're here in Rochester, not that we're not touched by the climate crisis, but you almost don't feel it as much because we don't see it as much around us, but it's becoming so much more prominent. Like one of my good friends just went to college and she had to move out of her dorm because of flooding, because she went to college in New York City. The wildfires, my mom's partner's son lives in California and he had to move out of his house, and his house is like almost burned down. It's really scary. So it's just, you hear more and more about it, and there's almost like no one anymore that isn't affected some way by the climate crisis. So it's just a really big deal. So I think that's why I'm involved.
You went away in the same way that Lola and Harrison talked about where they are on this sort of the scale of optimism. And by that, I mean not only how they see this, but the people with legislative power right now have an immediate impact on the next 5, 10, 20 years, which is going to make a big difference. And this room is sort of split on whether there's optimism that there's going to be real, meaningful action. Where are you on that, Bridget?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I have to join Harrison. I'm definitely pretty scared about the next few years because, I mean, I think back to the Climate and Leadership Community Protection Act, which is something that was passed in New York State Legislature. And I think activists took about 8 years getting that passed. And it says we have to, it says New York has to be carbon neutral by 2050. And they took about 8 years getting that passed, and it's almost not being implemented right now. And that's just scary to me. And 2050 is like basically too late at this point by what the new report from the new report says. So it's just very scary to me. And, but the way I feel about it is I have to in some way be optimistic and keep fighting because there's really nothing else you can do. Like, it's better than just doing nothing.
Poppy Burak, tell me about yourself in the same way.
Yeah, so I started in elementary school. My classes did a lot on recycling and specifically education about recycling and just climate in general. And so now that I am in eighth grade, I am trying to start back up School of the Arts' climate club because I feel, one, it's important to keep that education going, and two, I want to keep getting educated myself.
Mm-hmm. And now, how do you feel about the progress you're making there? And frankly, how do you feel about the progress this country or the world's making on this issue? Are you an optimist, Poppy?
Kind of. I feel like if we can get kids because they are very, they're a lot easier to interact with. And if we can get enough of the new generation together, then we might be able to make some change.
Well, we're talking to Poppy Burak, Bridget Musa, Harrison Jurenko, Lola DeAscentis, and they are all part of not only their what's happening in their schools, but what's happening in their community as students who care about climate action. Coming up here from Sunday, September 26th, all the way through the week there, there's going to be interesting events. The Green Games are coming up. We'll talk about that in a moment here, because they've done a lot of organizing. They're challenging their peers in other schools, and I think they hope there will be some creative ideas and some people getting on board with change action. Now, I already have an email from a listener, and I'm just going to kick it over to Lola, and I'll let anybody else jump in if you want. I'm going to read this because I think every time we talk to students, kids of various ages, young adults about climate, I get some feedback from listeners who tend to be conservative, not always, who feel like when they hear Bridget talk about fear or things being scary, or they talk about pessimism, they feel like that this is doing some sort of psychological damage to kids. And this email says, the level of climate change indoctrination in our schools is amazing. Freedom of thought is being lost. So here's what I find fascinating about this. Harrison's already shaking his head. You guys can all jump in on this. But here's what I find fascinating about this. If what the emailer is talking about is the freedom to believe that climate change is not happening, it is true that schools don't want students thinking that because it's not correct. It's valuable to have people not believe things that are not true. But the freedom of thought idea, there's all kinds of creative ideas about what we do about this, whether it's, you know, from everything from the Meatless Mondays to divestment, et cetera. And there's not always agreement. That's the interesting thing. Whether it's legislation, policy, how fast we move, how we do it, how you organize, there's a huge range of thought about what to do or not do here. And I am not hearing anything from these students that says we must monolithically all believe that every action must be taken in the same way, or that, you know, there's only one set of ideas that you must adopt or you're out. I mean, I don't hear that at all, but I could be wrong. Lola, you want to hit that?
This is what I'm going to say to that. In response to that listener, he or she or they use the word indoctrination. And I would just like to point out the fact that I think we can all see climate change happening around us. Those pictures from California aren't fake. I mean, we know people that live in New York City and Texas and all of the countries of the world that are affected by this. So how can it be indoctrination when it's happening right before our eyes? Not only is this something that we learn about in school, it's something that we see right in front of us. When it comes to the school aspect, I really do firmly believe that our schools are not only here to educate us and get us into college, but they're here to prepare us for the future. And this is, you know, when we talk about divestment with the teachers who are involved in this movement too, our teachers are investing in our futures. And to invest in our futures and not touch on the fact that our world is crumbling, I feel would just be silly. So yes, that's what I'll say. And I'll turn it over to Harrison if you have anything to add.
Yeah, you go ahead, Harrison.
Yeah, so I'd like to begin this by saying that there is a little bit of truth. I don't think to what the emailer said. I do think that teaching, you know, if we were teaching young kids that, hey, you're all going to die if you don't do something quickly and the world is going to, you know, burn, basically, like, I think that's very harmful and scary and psychologically abusive to younger kids. But that's not really happening. What's being told to younger kids is that, you know, that this is a problem that we need to fix. Let's figure out how to fix it. Let's talk about solutions to this. And I think once we get older to high school age, you know, yeah, it's scary, but it's true. I mean, it's not an exaggeration of the facts to say that if we don't do something about climate change, that there are going to be catastrophic economic and ecological effects across the world and humanitarian crises. And I don't think that should just be scary to high schoolers or middle schoolers. It should be scary to everyone. Anyone who has kids, anyone who knows anyone who will be alive when we start to see, like, the more extreme, and we're already seeing the more extreme dangers of this. I mean, you have the even the things like the fires to the west, you know, I was walking on the Ford Street Bridge, and you know, there's a haze of smoke like that has drifted
all
the way.
Yeah, we had some serious smoke haze this summer. We did. That came from the Pacific Northwest. But there's a difference, Harrison, between an appropriate level of fear or concern versus psychological damage from fear. What do you make of that distinction?
I think that's kind of a myth that there's really like, you know, I think any idea can be used harmfully, including true idea. Like if you hammer home a fact or take it to an extremist level where, you know, you're making someone feel like really guilty about their life habits that they don't have control over or things like that. Like that's obviously not a good thing. But I think both sides can agree that any like that things that are seriously harming the mental health of children are bad. But simply saying like we have a problem and that we need to fix it. This is a real issue, and that this issue is something that people care about, and that action can be taken but isn't being taken is it's heartbreaking to hear that, and like that people are just ignoring it.
Yeah, go ahead, Lola.
Yeah, and going off of that, I would say that psychological abuse would be telling children our planet's burning out, there's no way to fix it, we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the difference between psychological abuse and education, which may be a little bit scary sometimes, is that we're learning this is what's happening to our climate currently, but you can be the one that makes the difference. And I think that's what's so powerful about organizations like the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, that we're coming together to find in that fear a sense of unity, optimism, that we can all work together and we can be the ones that change it. It is definitely, I think, when it becomes a bit scary is when we're talking about these issues, yet as Harrison touched on, nothing's really happening in the United States Congress in terms of climate. But then again, I think we can be the ones that make the difference because one day, you know, we'll be the ones running for office.
Yeah, and I'll turn it over to Bridget and Poppy in a second. What comes to mind for me is a moment where I remember sitting on my couch and I was kind of curled up a little bit, and I was reading the news from Italy last March about COVID, and I was reading a personal appeal from an Italian doctor in northern Italy who was saying, every patient who comes in, it's interstitial bilateral pneumonia, every single one. We don't even have beds anymore, and this is coming to you. Now, this is right when Rochester had its first case of COVID, and it was pretty shocking because there was very little talk until things really tore open in March. And I remember thinking, you know, we have airwaves to fill that we're going to have to talk about this. What's the responsible way to do this? Because anything you say about a virus that's killing people with no vaccine is a little frightening. But at the same time, if it's just because it's frightening, if we're going to withhold this, that does more damage. The more damaging thing to do would be to say, this is a frightening thing, and even though it's real, I don't want to scare you. So let's talk about something else. And we didn't do that, but you try to do it responsibly. And I think that's what Harrison and Lola are saying, is there are appropriate and inappropriate ways to teach climate change, to teach climate action ideas. But by and large, what they're experiencing is the empowering kind. It's not the kind that is like sending them home into the fetal position thinking there's nothing anybody can do and, you know, everything is doomed here. So that at least that's what I'm hearing. But Bridget, you were the one, you brought up, you know, how scary things can be. So what would you say to the emailer?
Well, I think for me, getting involved with climate activism has been like one of the most empowering things I've ever done. So learning about climate change is really important because it does kind of bother me when adults say that like kids can't deal with something that's like very real, like climate change. Like mm-hmm. I think kids are stronger than they think and should know like what's going on in the world, especially something that's going to impact their life so much. And like I was saying, like I had a lot of climate anxiety, and getting involved has just helped me so much. Like I have so much more confidence in every part of my life. And also like I feel so much better about the climate crisis, especially working with such like great youth who are also super worried about it and seeing that like I'm not the only one, because I think it can feel that way sometimes. And that's one reason I think the Green Grams are so great, because getting traction with students is really important to me. And I think honestly, I don't think we talk about climate change enough in school. Like, I think it should be like a constant thing that's brought to almost every class, since it's a really important part of our life.
Let me ask Poppy, same question. Do you feel, you know, sort of psychologically damaged by what you're learning?
No, actually, I think it's really nice to, in school, have the information given to you, and then students are allowed to take that information and do and come up with ideas on how to change the world for the better. And it, as Bridget said, it kind of gives you a bit of relief, actually, because it's like, I am doing something to help.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
We wouldn't be here right now sitting with you and talking to you and putting together this Climate Week if we didn't think change was possible.
Yeah, and just to close the loop here, as we go to our only break of the hour, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Green Games. We're going to get you all set for the schedule. I'm very curious to know how many schools are involved or if more will get involved. And we'll do that on the other side of this break. As we go to break, let me just say to the person who emailed, the notion of that this is squashing dissenting ideas, it's not squashing dissenting ideas any more than, nobody would teach in science class that water is dangerous and drinking water would kill you, okay? Because it's not true. If your belief is that that's true, okay, you can believe that. No one is going to teach that, and no one should. No one is going to teach that climate change is not a real thing, that it's not happening, because it is happening. And if you would like it, if you believe differently, you are free to believe that. You're free to believe that. But schools ought to be teaching things that are true. Now, what you do with that information is the question. And there are all kinds of ideas. There is a diversity of thought that goes very, very far and wide about on this. We talked about it yesterday with a former U of R graduate who is now back in her hometown of Flint, Michigan. She ties economic justice and a lot of different things together to this. Others don't believe that we should. There are people on the political left who say that you shouldn't rope in to the Green New Deal economic justice and others. It's an interesting debate. It's a wide range of thought. But we're not teaching that water is poisonous. And we're not teaching that climate change isn't happening. And that's okay, because it's important to teach things that are true and then let kids, well, do what they're doing. That's part of what they're here to do today. They are doing really interesting things. And let's talk about this on the other side of the break, what they're going to do next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about a local OBGYN who is accused of using his own sperm to artificially inseminate multiple women. This doctor is now being sued by a former patient, a woman who says that he is her biological father. A second person has come forward, an adult who says the doctor is also his biological father. This is a story about patient rights and the rights of all people to know who their parents are. We'll talk about it.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So the Green Games are coming up, and there's different themes on different days, right?
Yes.
Can I just go down the list? Can we just kind of take them day by day?
Of course.
All right. So tell people again when the Green Games are.
So it's going to be September 26th. That starts on a Sunday, I believe, through October 2nd, which is a Saturday.
Who's participating?
So we have a couple different ways to participate. It's really, I'd say, open to anyone in Rochester who wants to participate, but it's geared specifically towards schools. The two options for participation is you can use our Google Forms, which is on our website, I believe, and in all of our social media bios, to sign up as a school team, kind of going back to that Olympics analogy, like as if you were Team USA or Team Japan, kind of like that idea. But also, if your entire school does not plan on participating, there's also ways to participate as an individual and record your progress that way.
All right. And if people want to reach out and learn more, where do they find it?
I would say our social media pages are really the best place to reach out. Rock Youth Climate Leaders on Instagram and RYCL15, I believe, is our Twitter.
Okay. Rochester Youth Climate Leaders on various platforms there. Theme of day one, Sunday, September 26th, the Brighton Eco Fair. Who do you want to take this one, Lola? Okay, Harrison, no? Lola's going to take it. What's going on at the Brighton Eco Fair? Oh. Sounds like Bridget wants to jump in.
Bridget can take it.
She's a Brighton student. Go ahead, Bridget.
Oh, so the Eco Fair is going to be super fun. It's planned by Color Brighton Green, which is an awesome organization that does a lot with recycling and just community planting trees, stuff like that. And basically, there's going to be a bunch of organizations right next to the Brighton Farmers Market, so at Brighton High School, my school. And it's going to be a bunch of organizations that are just set up there. You can go talk to them, get involved with them. NYTCL will be there. RICL will be there. I'm not sure about other ones, but I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of great organizations. So you can come out, say hi to us. We love meeting new people and people who are passionate about climate change like us. So definitely come.
Sunday, September 26th, what time?
9 a.m.
to 1 p.m.
9 to 1. Okay.
I think it's 9 to 11.
Oh, 9 to 11.
It's
9 to 11. Got it. Okay.
Sorry,
that's the Brighton Eco Fair. That is day one. Day two is Monday, September 27th. It's Meatless Monday. All right, Lola, you're up.
So, Meatless Monday, we've got a nice alliteration there. This day is going to be a day where students will be encouraged to pack a meatless lunch, or students who are homeschooled will be encouraged to eat a meatless lunch at home. And for those schools who have school teams participating, we are encouraging students from those schools to talk to their cafeteria staff about possibly having a vegetarian option at school that day. So there's that action item of changing your own life. But we're also going to be doing some, I believe, educational things about the meat and dairy industry and how they can be harmful. And in addition to that, we didn't include this in the name of the day because Meatless Monday was just such a nice alliteration. But we'll also be doing some compost education. I know at my school, I'm going to be bringing in some compost bins to the cafeteria and teaching my peers about composting so that maybe they can take that on even within their own homes. And I believe I have some friends who are even trying to get compost bins permanently in our school's cafeteria.
All right. That's Meatless Monday.
Could I add to that real
Yeah,
quick?
Please do.
We were also taking in vegetarian and vegan recipes from students, like their favorite vegetarian and vegan recipes.
Cool. And I think that's important because for the people who haven't sort of made a switch over, sometimes you think it's daunting or, you know, what am I going to eat? I thought that. So I want to kind of ask the students a little bit about this question of meat. And with no judgment, this is a great example of what we're talking about with diversity of thought. On the subject of climate action, the subject of meat can be contentious. I've seen the emails for years for people who are very upset that I still eat some meat. And I'll hear from somebody today. I eat a heck of a lot less meat than I ever have. I grew up just in a household that it was there all the time. It's fine. Love my mother. Great cook. But, you know, it was just there. And it was convenient. And it was just sort of part of the fabric. And I just eat a whole lot less of it now. I cook a lot less of it myself, and I probably could do even better with that. And I say better because the facts are really clear on this. I mean, generally speaking, industrial agriculture does a number on the environment. It's a real problem, and it's better for our health, generally speaking, to eat less meat if we can. So I need to probably do a little bit better with that, but I've made a big change personally. And I'm curious to know where the students are, like maybe where you are now and where you kind of grew up with. Lola, can I start with you? We'll go around the panel here.
Sure, yeah. So I come on both sides of my family from a pretty big Italian-American family, so meat is sort of part of our tradition.
Absolutely.
I've grown up eating meat. But I can say, especially in recent months, as I've learned more about the climate crisis and even seen the IPCC report, I have tried to eliminate meat from my diet as much as possible. Just last night, I made myself a veggie burger rather than eating chicken for dinner.
Interesting.
But I also think that something you said that was really interesting is that you've tried to eliminate meat from your diet. And I really do think that's what we're stressing here, is that you don't have to completely go vegetarian or vegan.
Yeah,
but if you can just reduce the amount of meat you eat, that in and of itself is a pretty big accomplishment. Or even for dairy, eating from local farms, which are a lot less, have a smaller environmental impact.
Yeah, this is one of the things I think education is doing better than when I was growing up, and I will make a qualitative judgment on better here. I think more students are being taught more information about what they're consuming, where it comes from, or they're being taught it's hard to know sometimes. It's frustrating to go to the grocery store and not know where a steak is from. How many miles did it travel? What were the conditions there? And if I don't know now, I don't want to buy it anymore. I at least want to know as a starter. And I have such affection for Italian families with those cooking traditions. But we can at least try to learn a little bit more about where the conditions are. And I think that's great. What about you, Harrison?
Meat is also, I love meat. And I think most people who eat meat, including the Burek's who love their bacon.
it is evil that bacon is so delicious.
Yes.
But go ahead.
I made an effort, and my family's made an effort to try to eliminate meat as much as possible, having less meat in our regular meals. Just like, this not every meal that you have needs to have there needs to have meat. There are other options of protein. Things like fish, I think, are less ecologically damaging. I have to make exceptions because my grandma, who's Vietnamese, makes really good Vietnamese food, which almost always has meat in it. I think generally just trying to like take very simple steps. You know, you don't need to completely eliminate meat or anything from your diet. Just reducing and trying to cut back on meat consumption is the key.
Yeah, be thoughtful. Hey, maybe even on Mondays, right? Like Meatless Mondays. Let me ask our guests on the phone how they feel about that one. Bridget, what do you think?
Yeah, so I am a vegetarian, and my family has never been huge on eating meat. The rest of my family are meat eaters, though, so I'm the only vegetarian. And personally, I never really liked meat that much. Like, actually, I think the day I became vegetarian was this day when I came home from school and there was like a dinner that had meat in it that I didn't want to eat. And I was like, I'm vegetarian now, so I can't eat this. But I stuck with it, and I've been a vegetarian ever since. And it definitely is something that I'm very passionate about. Like, I do think that the meat industry is very harmful, and I love animals, so I don't even want to think about eating animals. But on a big scale, I never judge people who eat meat because I don't know. It's like, it's not something to judge people about. And something my mom says that I really agree with is that it's not really about completely eliminating meat and saying I'm a vegetarian, or completely eliminating eggs and milk too and saying you're a vegan. It's not about saying that. It's about making intentional decisions like every day. So like, if you have the option between meat and vegetarian, maybe choose the vegetarian. If you have the option between something that you don't know where it comes from and something that you know is from a local farm, like choose the local foreign farm and like do research. But yeah, I guess that's my opinion on it.
What do you think, Poppy?
So I am personally vegetarian, but the rest of my family is not. The way I got started being vegetarian is my brother came home from school one day and just told my mom, let's just try being vegetarian. Let's just try it. And we got through about a year, and then he ate meat. And now the rest of my family's mostly meatless. And if it's possible, like, going mostly meatless, or at least just cutting a tiny bit of meat out of your diet, can be very good. And it's better to have 10 people who don't eat meat for one meal than one person who never eats, like 10 people who don't eat meat for one meal once a week, than one person or two people who are vegetarian or vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Meatless Monday is the Monday theme. And they're also going to talk about composting too, which is great. Every time we talk about that on this program, it blows up. And people are more and more interested in composting as a really smart thing to do at home. Or are you're part of the Rochester City Composting? Is that right?
Yes, I am.
That means what, at home for you? You guys are one of the 1,000 households or something like that?
Yeah. So the Rochester City Compost Program just started this summer. It's in its pilot stage, meaning that there are 1,000 people in Rochester trying it. My family is one of those. We basically have a big bucket where we can put our compost. And they also gave us a smaller, kind of like a mini trash can bucket to keep near our house or in our house. And every single week we drop it off in Cobbs Hill, bring home our bucket, clean it out, and do the same the next week.
I wonder if more schools are going to do stuff like this.
Yes, actually, at my school, I go to Mercy. We have a Mercy Green team, and I was just talking to our Mercy Green team co-presidents, and that's something that they're working on, is composting in schools.
Very cool. Tuesday, September 28th of the Green Games Week coming up here is the Art Challenge. Who's gonna head this one up here, Lola? You got to delegate. I heard somebody. Is that Bridget?
Poppy.
Hi, Poppy. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the Art Challenge is really to bring in lots of different kids from a lot of different age groups. And it's one of those ones that we thought, hey, this is a good challenge for everybody, no matter what their age. And it's basically, what does a sustainable future look like to you? And that can be taken, and like, we're accepting any media and anything like that. And it's all due on that Tuesday.
I think it's great. We mentioned at the top of the hour an opera on the subject of art, and it's being hailed around on the subject of climate change. It's being hailed around the world. Art can be very, very powerful if done well. Even art, a sculpture is made of garbage or recycling. Harrison, are you an artistic person?
I really enjoy making art, but I'm not very good at it.
you're like me, man. Yeah, I hear that. But do you sense that there are perhaps some powerful messages that can be found in art in various ways here?
Yeah, I mean, I love going to the MAG and looking at art, and I think, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words and can often tell a story unto its own. And, you know, utilizing that art form, which a lot of people, you know, everyone likes to do a different thing. Everyone likes to express themselves in a different way. And, you know, I'm more of a writer. I like to write. But, you know, I go to school with arts, and everyone has their major, and that kind of dictates what kind of way they want to express themselves. So whether that's singing or creating art, and I think channeling people's passion for visual arts in this scenario or whatever, is a good way to engage people in climate action and, like, make them think deeper about their actions and the actions of their community.
So the Art Challenge is Tuesday, September 28th. Wednesday, September 29th, is a day focused on environmental justice. A question on what environmental justice is, why it matters, and participants in the upcoming Green Games are going to be encouraged to watch videos, listen to podcasts on the subject. Harrison, Lily, you want to jump in this, Harrison? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty well established that people with higher incomes generally per capita have more ecological impact than people with lower incomes. And that also cuts along racial lines because of economic disparities there. So highlighting and the other side of that is that the effects of climate change and pollution are felt much more heavily in lower income communities. So we find it really important to highlight that and educate people that everyone's action, you know, has an impact. And often the people who are bearing the brunt of the impact of climate change are not the ones who are most contributing to it.
And probably have the fewest resources to do something about it, right?
Yeah, it's a lot harder with less economic resources, not only in communities, but countries that are still developing for them to, you know, be sustainable. And yet we still, countries with more wealth like the U.S. still, you know, don't take meaningful action.
Yeah, this is something that Kevin Williamson of National Review addressed this a couple of years back, in which he wrote a piece just saying that if you live in a place where the water is rising, move. Which ignores, I think, two things. First of all, there are some people who go through this life and they love living in different places. And there are many others who feel great pride in wherever they're from, whether it's Rochester or Brighton or Penn Yan or Ethiopia or Brazil or any place on the planet, and they don't want to move. They want to make their community better, and they take pride in that. Second of all, the notion of just, well, just move assumes everyone's got resources and it's easy. Yeah, you go ahead, Harrison. You want to
check? I know conservative political pundit Ben Shapiro is also
said the same thing,
which is just kind of ridiculous. First of all, who are you selling your house to if your area is going underwater or is high risk of flooding?
Exactly right.
No one's going to want to buy that house, and it kind of falls along the same lines of, you know, if you're homeless, just buy a home. Like it's kind of ridiculous.
Problem solved, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to be flip, but yeah, that is one of the views that you hear a lot. So, interesting theme and an important theme, and that's day four. Day five, Thursday, September 30th, is the divestment petition. Lola, who should talk about divestment here?
I can talk about divestment.
Yes. There we go.
Lola, you want to take it?
Yep.
So divestment is something that the New York Youth Climate Leaders has worked on a ton. We worked on divesting the Common Retirement Fund, which did get divested. I can't remember exactly when, but that was a really big deal for us. And that is the biggest retirement fund in New York State, whereas the Teachers Retirement System is the second biggest fund in New York State retirement fund. And it has about $4 billion invested in fossil fuels. And I believe it just invested like another $20 million pretty recently in fossil fuel companies and fossil fuel stocks. And it's just really important to us just the fact that we're still funding fossil fuels is always really upsetting to me with everything that's going on. And I think that getting students involved with this is a really good way to go about it, because personally as a student, I feel pretty betrayed, I guess, by the retirement fund, because my teachers are preparing me for my future, trying to get me ready to live in this world that tentatively is being destroyed by fossil fuels. So,
divestment. Yeah. I think there's some news. Where was the news? I'm looking at my stack of notes here. The news. The group just learned this week that Adam Urbanski, the president of the Rochester Teacher Association, is in support of bringing a resolution to the RTA to divest from fossil fuel industries. So that's big. I mean, that's a big step. Lola, you want to mention something about that?
Not specifically about that, but I just wanted to say, yes, I think it really is seeing all of these small steps and seeing all of our work at least start to have an impact is really incredible. But I also wanted to mention in other recent news that I think it was just this past week, Harvard actually announced that they are going to be divesting all of their fossil fuel holdings. And what I think is so interesting about that is that started with student groups at Harvard, just like us here in Rochester in New York State. So to see that happen just shows that divestment is possible.
Speaking of, the next day, day six of this event is Friday, October 1st, which is a day themed around taking a stand against fossil fuels, and it will include a march to the Rochester Teachers Association and the NYSET headquarters to thank them for now supporting divestment. So that will happen on Friday. Otherwise, that day will focus in various ways on the impact of fossil fuels. And lastly, day seven, Saturday, October 2nd, the theme is media share. So you want to find ways to reach. I want to close the program with this. I want to ask all of you about this. So we'll go as fast as we can here. Bridget, let me start with you. Where are people your age getting their information and sharing information? What platforms? Because journalists always have to know this. Where are the next adults finding information? Bridget.
You're asking where we get our information?
Yeah. Besides NPR.
Yeah, of course. I get a daily newsletter about climate change from the New York Times. I also am subscribed to Bill McKibben's newsletter. Love Bill McKibben. And otherwise, I think people find Instagram like not having a good reputation, but you can get a lot of good information, reputable information off of social media and Instagram if you follow the right sources, whether that's the New York Times or Democrat and Chronicle. So that's mostly where I get mine.
All right, real quick,
Poppy. I think that's the same for many kids.
What about you, Poppy?
As a younger kid, I don't really have social media platforms. And so school and just your family at home is my way of getting information.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think that's smart. Great. I mean, you're in eighth grade. I think that's totally logical. Lola, different age. Where about you? Where are you getting information?
To be completely honest, I listen to NPR almost daily. That's my main source of information. I do also, like Bridget said, I find it really interesting. Sometimes I'll see a post on social media about a certain news headline, and then I'll go and do some more research for myself, which is pretty interesting. And also, shout out to some of my classes at school, specifically my senior Socratic seminar class, because we actually do a media share at the beginning of every single class where we talk about the major headlines and discuss them. So that's been pretty influential.
Socratic dialogue. Good for mercy. And Harrison, what about you?
I also do the you know, seeing something on social media and then checking out the official source.
And various sources, yeah.
Also listen to a few different pundits on YouTube and Twitch and stuff.
You listen to any podcasts?
Not really.
Not a big podcast person? Lola, yes?
Yeah, I listen to podcasts when I can. I think my favorite when it comes to climate is How to Save a Planet. That one's pretty interesting, but there's so many great climate podcasts out there, which we'll be sharing on day 7.
Day 7, Saturday, October 2nd. Media share using the Padlet app to share picks for movies, books, podcasts, and more about the climate crisis and environmental sustainability. So those are the 7 days. You've heard it all. And one more time, Lola, as we close the program, where can people engage with the schedule? Get involved, learn more.
Our social media platforms and our website, rycl.org.
Lola is a senior at Mercy. Congratulations on putting this all together. Not just you, but the whole team. Thank you, Lola. Thank you for being here. Great having you. Harrison, thank you for being here. Harrison is a senior at School of the Arts. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And our thanks to Bridget, junior at Brighton High School, Bridget Musa. Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you.
Poppy Burak, an eighth grader at School of the Arts. Thank you, Poppy.
Thank you.
The Green Game's coming up, led by this remarkable group of, I was going to say kids, they're really the future adults who are doing great work. More connections coming up.